Welcome to the Grow My Salon Business podcast, where we focus on the business side of hairdressing. I'm your host, Anthony Whitaker, and I'll be talking to thought leaders in the hairdressing industry, discussing insightful, provocative, and inspiring ideas that matter. So get ready to learn, get ready to be challenged, get ready to be inspired, and most importantly, get ready to grow your salon business. Hello and welcome to today's episode of the Grow My Salon Business podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Whitaker, and as always, it's great to have you here with us today. Now, video versions of our podcast are also available on our YouTube channel. So if you want to put faces to the names, then head on over to Grow My Salon Business on YouTube and like and subscribe to the channel. And if you're watching this on YouTube, then remember to hit the like or thumbs up button. It's a small thing that you can do that goes a long way for us. So on with today's show. Now, I can't think of any family in the world of hairdressing that has made the impact that the Muscolo family have, whether it was the salons, the schools, the products, or the incredible shows and stunning photography. The Muscolo brothers, Tony, Guy, Bruno, and Anthony were at the forefront of everything in hairdressing. My guest today is Anthony Muscolo, whose creativity and leadership was the force behind the creative direction of the brand. So in today's podcast, we will discuss the use of AI in hairdressing, the changing salon business today, leadership and team building, and lots more. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Anthony Muscolo.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a complete pleasure to be chatting with you, Anthony.
Well, it's good to have the opportunity. We've been able to do this a few times over the last, I dare say, 30 to 40 years.
Yeah. A long time ago in Australia, I remember that.
In New Zealand, when we first met, I think it was like...
Really? In New Zealand first? Well, you know what? They were both very similar in the sense.
I get it. Okay, yeah, don't tell them that.
Good to see you.
Okay, so listen, let's jump in and get going because I know you're pressed for time. You recently told me, when I last saw you, you said to me that you had retired. But knowing you, that's probably not strictly true. So what are you doing with yourself these days?
Well, you know, we did retire. You know, after COVID, it was kind of a lot of different situations were going on. And it was a good time to say, right, you know what, I need to stop doing what we're doing and take some time out, you know, time out to be with my wife and just enjoy, you know, the next stage of your life, really. And I think that's what we're doing. We're having a great time. You know, we still do a few things, you know, if someone wants to shoot and it's something that's appealing, then, you know, we'll go for it and work with it. You know, it's still in your blood it's not really work, you know, but still got the library where we do Infringe. And Infringe is going strong. You know, we do stuff online all the time. And we've got a new print that came out at the end of last year. Which we do one a year, one every year and a half. And, you know, so things are as busy as they can be, really.
Yeah, good, good. Okay. That's what I wanted to talk about, actually, with Infringe, because one of the things that I noticed that in the latest one is that you have started to integrate AI into all the photographic side of stuff that you're doing, which is really exciting. And I know you've always been very experimental with photography. So talk to us about AI and Infringe and how you're utilizing that and what you see the future is for that.
Well, I think, you know, AI has been there for ages. You know, we haven't really taken as much notice as we do now, but, you know, it's been on our phones, you know, Siri's been there for ages. And it's all part of helping you achieve certain commands you want the computer to do. And I think really with photographic work, it's improved a lot in the sense of what it gives you. There's two ways of playing it. I mean, for me, it was really just experimenting. It's not something that we're really integrating into everything we're doing. Because I think it's the programs that you get depending on how you retouch and how you work with your, you know, pictures and whatever. And there's Adobe that is very strong in this, but very in control of what you do. You know, and then there's other ones that kind of just give you sporadic kind of images from putting an image in, you get something out of it. But what's interesting, it's a form of really research. You know, I don't think it's, I enjoyed it because it was something different and quite quick. but it's a form of research, really. Like you use Pinterest or you use, you know, magazines. Like years ago, we'd cut up magazines and have all different ideas and try and then work something in between that appealed to you and that was what you wanted to do. And I think really AI is very similar to that. You know, you're telling it to show you lots of different things and see what it comes up with. So it's kind of an inspirational tool for yourself, you know, because it's good at creating stuff. It makes some ridiculous looking things too, but yeah, it can do some good. But it's still really, you know, in its infant stages, but it's also very much to do with the creative. You've got to think how AI works, really. It's that instead of, you know, going through a load of processes and going through a load of stages, you just tell it. And once you understand the language and learn the language and, you know, your particular program learns your language, then you start, you know, you can retouch things much quicker. Instead of going around retouching it all around the picture, you can just tell it to do it and it does it. And so it's instant. So really it's just a new tool, like everything, you know, like editing years ago when it was on 1 inch, 2 inch, and then it became, you know, Avid. And it revolutionized, you know, all those big machines. Mm. It's the same thing. It'll take over some things that you use now anyway and make it faster and allow you to do different kind of creatives. You know, but it's still down to yourself, really, what you want to achieve. Yeah. The story we did in Fringe really was playing around using some of our old images and just seeing how it can just transform and, you know, see what can happen with hair. And I think it's, you know, it's a great thing. It's a great thing. You know, it can really be quite creative with it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. In the 80s, when you sort of picked up a camera and really started to develop that side of your, you know, sort of creative expression, it led to you entering a lot of awards and winning a lot of awards, you know, you and the team. So I want to ask you about AI in terms of awards, because, you know, what you can do with AI isn't what you're doing with hair, so to speak, as a hairdresser. It's what you're doing with the technology. So what sort of impact do you think that AI is going to have on the, you know, awards side of the industry?
I would imagine really it needs to be policed. You know, people need to do it and show the Polaroid and show the real work and whatever. I think maybe eventually there'll be something that is an award for AI. So it's using your own kind of talent to create something. Yeah. Not necessarily the hairdresser, but the person who's working on, you know, the actual photographer or whatever. But I don't think it will be a problem. I think they'll find solutions on how to make sure people don't use it to kind of not be doing the hair. I mean, when it's a hair awards, it's about the quality of the hair and how they've done it. You know, if you really look now, you know, people can retouch, place another bit, make it longer, make it thicker, make it this, make it that. You know, you can do that anyway. But, you know, a lot of the looks are, you showed the, you know, the original photograph or the Polaroid or, you know, whatever. I mean, everyone can cheat, but I don't think it's really necessary or possible really to cheat that much. AI will be, you'll know if something's, you know, I think you have to have, probably eventually it'll be do it live. You know, I mean, that'll probably be, you know, the situation that people, if they're entering, and they've got a collection, then they've got to do that collection live.
Yeah.
I think that will probably be an add-on if it becomes out of control. But I don't think it will. I think, you know, I think if it's got its own place, which it probably will get its own place, then it won't have so much a problem of, you know, trying to, you know, you're going to use it to the maximum because that's what you're using, you know. So, but if people are not sure if it's real or not, I think probably eventually some of the, you know, the photographic competitions will want to see some of the work live. Not all of it, but maybe, you know, one or two or something.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a really interesting way around it, what you just said. Actually have a section, have a category for AI. Yeah, so definitely. No one's having to hide anything. You're saying this is the AI category.
Yeah.
And then with the other categories, show a before and after, Polaroid, you know, that sort of thing. So, yeah.
I mean, the real problem is with art, you know, the AI can do a lot of very, you know, creative stuff by studying everybody else's art. It can do it really quickly.
Yeah.
And, you know, merge them, do the same or whatever. So, you know, to be an artist and to paint and to do all those things and to create and think and whatever takes you years, and it, you know, takes, you know, being clever and a genius or whatever, having that talent.
Mm.
And so there is a slight problem because you can't always, you know, the AI is really a a wealth of information that it can just put that stuff together. With hairdressing, I think, you've got to do real hair to be a hairdresser. You've got to do clients. I think that's why we're in a good place. We've always been in a good place. A lot of things have taken over from other industries, but you can't really get someone else to do, a machine to do hair.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I know we were just chatting before we push record and you'd just come back from Japan. And it's interesting, what you see in different countries as to how salons use technology. So what I wanted to ask you about was AI in a salon sense, not photography. Do you see any other uses as to how AI could be integrated?
I think it's being used anyway, gathering data, gathering your clients, making sure that you can then give them information at the right time, what shampoos they like and all that. That's AI, working it all out for
you.
Yeah. And kind of getting it in some kind of order. And I think really technology, absolutely, where it's organizing and detailing and all that kind of stuff, it's already being used. I would imagine it's not there. Look at AI, how it's changing everything. It's just slowly doing its bit. It's getting better and better and more effective. So it can then eventually, do the job, for you in a sense of that you still have to tell it and gear it. It's not going to do it on its own. Mm. And, because it's doing it for you. So I would imagine that's not really going to change.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not really sure. I'm not in the salon, so,
Yeah, yeah.
But I know everything is much more, you can look at everything on your phone, everybody's clients. When they're coming in, who's cancelled, what time they're doing this, that, and everything. It's all on your phone. So I think that's really a little bit to do with AI.
Yeah, no, it is for sure. Okay, now, you're not in the salon business, so to speak, anymore. But, 20, 30 years ago when, you and your brothers, the Tony and Guy salons were sort of exploding everywhere, it was a very different sort of business to what it is today, because like in the UK now, 60% of hairdressers are self-employed.
Yeah.
If you were opening salons today, if you and your brothers were starting today, what do you think you would do different as far as salons go?
Well, the thing is, when we opened the salons, my brother started first, Tony and Guy, the oldest, and they started the brand Tony and Guy, and that was in the 60s, 63. Then from there, Bruno joined in 68, and I joined in 74. My dad was part of it. So basically the thing that we did was that we were a family. It was a family doing the business. And I think the success was because it was a family and we were all very, close and we all had a different role. Mm. I think, if you started today, you'd do the same thing, really. If you could still work as a family, you'd do the same thing. But you'd probably have a different system, of how you work. I think people... Having people coming in, you get all assistants and, you work it that way and they all train, they do their bartering and they grow, all the things that we learned and kind of studied from, Vidal Sassoon and all the different ones that then made our own method and our own way. Obviously, we had our own way of cutting, but it was getting everything in some kind of order. It is different today. I think you can still do that, but it would be different. I think, people don't have as many assistants in salons. A lot of the stylists are on commission, a lot of them freelancers. So, there's a lot of businesses that I think what's important when you have a salon is that the quality of everybody in that salon is a high standard and an equal standard, as much as possible. That's why we obviously did all that training, still do, the Tony and Guy Saturday, which my nieces and nephews run. And, it's their business. They do a great job. But it's still, if it was today and you're starting, you would have maybe more people renting a position, but still being under a banner of education. So you could still do education for everyone. I mean, this is me just talking off the top of my head.
It's interesting your thoughts on it.
You still want everyone to have some form of, quality in where they're working from. Mm. But they're not, as committed, I suppose, being involved in every single thing and then making their own money and whatever. I think people, after COVID, it changed dramatically. You've seen a lot of people that have had salons and a lot of salons, lose some of them. And I think it's really to do with everyone getting their independence. It's COVID, it was Instagram, social media, everyone being able to promote themselves as themselves and create their own little world of clients and whatever. And I think really... its progression. It's where it's moved on to. You know, we all still have how we believe hair should be done and whatever. But, you know, it was no different then to it is now. You know, you've got really great ones and you've got ones that weren't much good, you know. But
yeah,
there were a lot of people that knew what to give the client, you know, and not necessarily cut perfect and did this style, but did what the client wanted and had a big clientele. And I think that's where it's at now. People are, you know, all a bit more independent. I think after a while, people will like to go somewhere and belong to something, but that can be in a different way. You know, maybe not as tied in and pay people and, you know, maybe they can rent a chair or pay for a position. There's a few salons doing that, you know, that are starting to move in that way. And I think, you know, we'll have to see. We'll have to see where it goes.
Yeah.
But it's the passion that whoever's doing it, you know, and if I look back at what was done, you know, it was four of us all having our own passion blended together that made it what it was. You know, I think it's very difficult to say I would have done all of that myself. You know, it'd be very different if I was on my own, or I think it'd be different if my brothers were on their own as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but, you know, it made what it was.
Yeah, that was the strength of it. You all had unique talents, and combined it turned into something that was very special, and that led to TG, the product brand, which was a, you know, a huge powerhouse in the world of products. And inevitably, you know, you had to sell it, or you did sell it, you chose to sell it.
Yeah.
And I often reflect on brands that are developed, like, by entrepreneurs, you know, the hairdresser who builds a brand like you guys did with TG, and then you sell it out to a big multinational, which I think is, there's an inevitability about that, because that's how you get your payday. But some of those brands succeed, others don't, under the banner of the multinational. Yeah. And I often wonder, why is it that some succeed and others don't? What's your sort of take on that?
Well, the hairdressing business is very unique. And, you know, when we built the product company, it was very much attached to the trade and to the hairdresser. So it was an extension to our salons, our academies, our clients, our schools, and then products. So it all intermixed into everything that you were doing. And the more we were teaching, the more people wanted to buy into the whole concept and idea. So you sold products. Products were a great way of selling, you know, people wanted education, but the more it went on, like today, you know, you can get a lot of free education and there's tons of it. But what you do is not really free if they have to buy products. Well, you know, it all worked in a way, but it was very much geared to the profession and to the hairdresser. And I think this was instilled in us that we, you know, as much as it was a lot harder and you had to work a lot more for less, you know, through, you know, how you sold it and how it worked. You know, because if you sell direct to the clients and you have all the middle situations out of the way, you make a lot more money. But we were very true to what it was. But, you know, it comes a day when, you know, it's owned by not just myself, but my brother. And my brother really, you know, it works in Italian family. It works, you know, the oldest.
Yeah.
Down. And, you know, it was a decision that was made. We were moving ahead. We were having difficulties trying to get color out there because of the big companies. And, you know, pretty much it stopped you. They pretty much could stop you, and then it could go backwards. So you needed, you know, an investment. You know, you needed someone that knew the path. And for, I would say, for 10 years, it was great. But like anything, it really, I think their decision was to go more to the public, and, you know, which is not a bad one, you know. And I think, but it was obviously not what we did. You know, we had a team, you know, it was about people doing hair, going around, building salons, and, you know, which is a long way around it. You know, and I'm sure they looked at that and said, you know, it's a pretty long way around this. Let's do it the way we know. And the way they know is obviously they sell millions of products to everyone, you know, from lots of different things. And I think really then, you know, once you've sold, it's not yours. So you're there to help and assist the direction they want to take. And I think, you know, after, you know, a couple of years, you get used to that and you work with that. And, you know, and then eventually you decide, okay, do I like this or I don't? But I think, you know, the decision obviously is there. So depending how you look at it, you know, for them, they're selling it in a different way. You know, for us, it was a product for the trade. So in the trade, it's probably gone a different direction. So, you know, But everything has its day, you know, I think.
Yeah.
And you know, it's done. It was amazing for us. And it was
huge.
Great times.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, for young hairdressers, you know, that are maybe just entering the industry now, they don't understand just quite how big it was because it just was everywhere.
I think today hair is different as well. You know, what it represented, what it did was very much the 90s and the beginning of the, you know, 2000s. And it had a real big impact, you know, through what it did to the hair and obviously what we were doing to the hair and you know, that creative side. It was a very fun, young kind of thing going on. And it was a perfect timing.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You have always been regarded as being the sort of creative, you know, powerhouse behind the brand. And your brothers had different roles, and your forte was the photography, the creativity, etc. But I think what a lot of people maybe underestimate, and, you know, I really like to draw attention to it because I think that one of the things that you brought to it, which maybe didn't get the recognition that it should have, is your qualities as a leader. You personally, and your qualities of building a team, because you were always very adamant about the art team. It was about the team of people, and you built a very strong team. So for people that are, you know, listening to this, watching this now, what would you say the keys are to building a successful team? What are the keys to being a great leader?
Well, I think, you know, whatever you want to lead, you need to be good at doing it yourself. You know, I think that's very important, and be confident and learn and have the rules that you make for yourself. You know, you got to, the rules that you want to tell other people, you got to do them too. You know, and I think that's very important. But, you know, I was taught well, you know, I've got to say, it's not just something that comes along. You know, my brother was a great leader. All three of them were, you know, Tony is a fantastic, you know, what he did, how he, you know, just grew the business, you know, the franchising, the thing. And what we had, when you do creative, people want to be part of that, and they want to be. It's then Bruno, you know, taught me how you gather people and you make them feel part of it, and you know, you make them, inspire them, and then you know, not just tell people, but get them to be part and share. And I think the thing that I learned from Bruno was, you know, whatever you do, share it. So then you have to learn more and you have to do more. Mm-hmm. And I think really he showed me also that, you know, he would give me the opportunity to do the hair instead of him doing it, because he was the creative at the beginning. You know, he would let me do it, he'd let Pat do it, he'd let, you know, Anestis, and different people that were there at the time. So he would share the creativity, you know, having given you the platform to be able to do something. And I think a lot of, you know, if you really look, there's a lot of people out there that it's their name, but you don't really see many other people within that brand. Mm-hmm. Or within their name that are doing stuff. It's all about them. And I think that's fine because that's how that works. But then when you're one of four brothers and you're all doing a different thing, you're all accepting that the other's doing great at what they're doing. You're not thinking you can do everything. Mm-hmm. I think that kind of instills you then to grow that family and grow that family in creativity, which was my job. You know, get people involved. The only way to get them better is to get them to do. And I think really that was taught to me. So being someone that shares what you do and you know, you've got to be good at what you do and believe in it. And I think that in turn creates a good leader. But I think really the job was to create talent that would be there to do things that we needed for the academies, for the salons, and create a standard that we all wanted and believed in. And I think that having that, you know, kind of strict plan in front of you, you know, makes you a good leader, you know, and giving people the opportunity.
Yeah, yeah, okay. You've always acknowledged the role that Pat has. So, yes, there's the four brothers, but then Pat also has always been your wingman. I mean, not just doing, you know, makeup and styling and hair and whatever. You so obviously have a very strong relationship, and you've been together a very long time.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, how long have we been together? 39, 40, I don't know. I'm 67 next week, and we were together when we were 20, 21.
There you go. So, yeah, that's a long time. So
that's a long time.
So what's the key to that? Like, because you work together, obviously, you're married. What's the key to that success?
I found somebody that, you know, really loves me, and I love her. And we're compatible in lots of things. She accepts all the things I rubbish at, and, you know, all my faults. And, you know, she doesn't really have any faults. So, you know, I obviously accept her being great. So, you know, it's we're very lucky. You know, we have fun. You know, the reason that we retired, you know, we're going to all the places that we went for work to go and have a look. We went to Japan, like we were saying earlier. And we went to Singapore. We've been to Singapore a few times, never seen it. So we went and stayed in that fancy hotel that on the top.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Saw all the trees, you know, and it was really a lot of fun. I think what we have is that, you know, well, you know, we love each other. And I think really we've been together. She's always been very strong in what we do, you know. Sometimes, you know, in the period of when we did it, you know, she took a back seat. But, you know, that was because she was having kids and we were having children and whatever. So she was partly working, but mainly looking after the kids, but still always been involved in, you know, what we do, right down to everything, really. I mean, you know, we do it together. And I think we do it together because we love each other. No, we've been together a long time and I couldn't be more grateful, you know. Very lucky to have Pat and to have had her, so, you know, for... I mean, you get less for murder.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Nah, she's been great, fantastic. And she is very inspirational, very talented hairdresser.
Yeah, I know she is.
Artist. I mean, you remember, you know, she was doing all the tricky ones that no one could do or wanted to do. Pretended they didn't want to do them but couldn't do them. That was really what it was.
Yeah, yeah. And she often doesn't get that acknowledgement for that.
Well, you know, I think I give her as much as that.
Yeah, you do. You consciously.
I'm going to give her all
No, she deserves it.
Myself.
Yeah, she deserves it. I mean, I've been lucky enough to be a little bit behind the scenes with you at different events and shows, and I see just how much she does and has always done. So,
when we were at Tony and Guy, we had a role, and then when we did TG, you know, we worked very closely together, got the Edit Studio, and it's always been that we worked together. You know, through, and then we started doing, you know, she kind of forced me to do the photography, bought me a camera, you know, I used it about a year later. She started then doing the makeup. So we were taking responsibility of the creativity that we wanted to do. And I think, obviously, the ideas were very close, you know, and she obviously, you know, loves me like I love her. So, you know, I think that's how we have that good relationship.
That's good. That's good. Okay. So looking back, you know, you've sort of retired. You look back at this incredible career. It's good that you can enjoy that time now because you worked so hard for so long on the road.
I mean, you know, when you're doing something you love, it's not really work. But if I really think about it, you know, since I was 14, I've been working 7 days a week, you know, 365 days a year.
Yeah.
Now, I remember even my brother getting us to do seminars on Boxing Day.
Yeah.
For years, Tony, you know, he used to love it. Yeah. But, you know, I wouldn't change a minute of it. It was such a great opportunity, you know, to be part of the whole thing that Tony and Guy created.
Yeah.
You know, and be part of creating something to do with it. You know, I think it's an incredible journey and, you know, very lucky to, you know, to be looking back and, you know, enjoying it. It's still going. You're doing an amazing job, you know,
totally.
Over here in the rest of the world. The salons, America's doing great with the education. Mm. You know, you move on, you know, but I think for us, you know, as we moved on and we're working more with TG and Unilever, you know, it's a good time to say, you know, thank you very much.
Mm.
And, you know, you think, right, what do I want to do? Do what I did. No, I don't want to do that. I'd like to do some shoots and it's fun. You know, we do the magazine a little bit, which, you know, I've got here, and play with some of the ideas. Mm. But the passion that we had before was, you know, the drive, because we were all four of us together going in the direction as brothers. And then all the team with you. You know, we had some fantastic people that have worked with us, you know, and been part of, you know, the journey of Tony and Guy and TG.
Mm.
And, you know, you can only look back and say, yeah, wow, what a great journey.
Yeah. Was there one particular career highlight when you look back at this, you know, incredible career you've had and sort of think that was a career highlight?
I think there's been a few shows that have really, you know, wow, this has been really great, and they really pull them off and the people really love it. And then there's obviously winning the awards when you're really trying to, you know, beat everybody else. So the early days of getting the awards was really good, you know, and they were good. You know, obviously, personally, there's been lots of other things that, you know, me and Pat have enjoyed, but we've enjoyed those things together. You know, when I'm British, they were interesting days because you're really at a point where you were like, you know, your brain was going mad because you just wanted to do stuff to beat everybody and to be better. And I think that passion, obviously, you do it, and you know, it's something you can remember, and it's something that's new to you when it's happening. You know, it's not something, you know, people still have that passion. I still have the passion to enjoy everything that we've done and what we can do. But I think, you know, you do remember those as, like, you know, the first experiences.
Sure. Yeah. I want to throw this question at you. What do you wish you were better at?
Oh, I don't know. I wish I was better at sport. I wish I was more consistent at sport. And, okay. Training. Yeah, I do it for a couple of months, then I get fed up.
Right.
I wish I was better at that. But it's a bit late now, you know, 67. I can still do a little bit of sport. Maybe I will kind of get myself, you know, so I do it consistently. But, you know, looking back, you know, I would have liked to have done more sport.
Okay. So looking forward, what's next? Last question.
Oh, yeah. Just go on holiday.
Go on holiday.
My wife.
Life's a holiday.
You know, go on holiday with my wife. Yeah, look. Here we're at the library. My son does art. He does hair as well. He works with Paul Hanlon occasionally doing, you know, the fashion shows, which is great, and he loves it. You know, he doesn't want to do hair every day, so he's doing his art, and he's doing some great stuff. I'm very proud of him. And my daughters, you know, one's getting a PhD, and she's about to finish that. And, you know, it continues, you know, to continue learning. My other daughter's, you know, raised a beautiful granddaughter for us, and she's amazing. You know, and so you couldn't be more grateful, really, for what's going on.
And
just enjoy that and try and spend more time. You know, when they were young, you know, we were busy. Mm-hmm. We were with them all the time, but, you know, we're with them even more, you know, now. So, you know, we took my daughter and my granddaughter to Japan. So, you know, then I'll take my son to Los Angeles. You know, try and take them apart, sometimes together, maybe twice a year together. You know, there will be a fight, obviously. There always is. But the rest of the times, take one with you and then take the other. So it's good. Have some quality time with them.
Yeah, it's important. How many grandchildren have you got?
One.
Just one? Right, okay.
It's one. You know, it's the one I got. She's great.
Good.
She's 10 already. She's like a teenager nearly.
Yeah, doesn't
need another little one.
Yeah, exactly. Well, maybe you won't have to wait that long. Whereabouts can people, where would you like to send people to check out, you know, what you're doing and stuff? Are you on social media? You know, are you on Instagram?
Go to Infringe. You know, I think Infringe is really, just to finish off on that, you know, it was a project that we did because we wanted to do more shoots and kind of, you know, show people what we were doing. But then we discovered there was so much talent out there that we had to, you know, it was unbelievable. And I'm not talking about, you know, the talent that I've been used to all my life doing hairdressing. It was everything but that, you know, literally putting, no, we won't use any of that work. We'll have a look at everything else. And then all of a sudden you've got artists using hair as a medium and some really crazy stuff, but very innovative, very, you know, gutsy, you know, people with a, you know, with passion and a nerve to do stuff. And I think that's, and we thought, oh, well, that'll run out really quickly because we call it anthropology and it's about what people did in the past. It doesn't seem to run out at all. People are just, you know, bombarding all this stuff with madder ideas all the time. Yeah. So we keep that going on Infringe, you know, online. So Infringe magazine, you know, they can see not necessarily what I'm doing, but what, you know, I was given great opportunities. And I think Infringe is a good way of showing people what else other talent are doing. And, you know, occasionally we do the print, which is always lovely. This is the latest one with Paul Hanlon, you know, on the cover, and it's very thick. It's like a proper book. Oh, the wrong page to open.
I didn't realize you still did them.
Yeah, we do the print. It's great. You know?
Right, okay. I thought they were.
It's a massive thing. Maybe I make a mistake. It's too heavy. You know?
Yeah. I thought you'd only gone online with them now.
No, we have four now.
Fantastic.
We'll do another one in a year or so.
Yeah, you
know,
good.
You know, I've always loved having it on print.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And I love the angle you've taken with that about the whole, what did you describe it as, the anthropology of hair. So yeah. It's not about hair for hairdressers or hair by hairdressers necessarily. Product. It's about culture and, you know, the role that hair has in society. So yeah. They can check that out on Instagram at it's just in Fringe magazine. Yeah, I'll put the links to that on our website and in the show notes for today's podcast.
Thank you.
So if you're listening to this podcast with Anthony and have enjoyed it, do me a favor and share it to your Instagram stories. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a rating and review on the Apple Podcast app. So to wrap up, Anthony Muscolo, thank you for being on this week's episode of the Grow My Salon Business Podcast.
Thank you very much. Cheers. Lots of love from me and Pat.
Thanks, man.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us, you'll find us at growmysalonbusiness.com or on Facebook and Instagram at growmysalonbusiness. And if you enjoyed tuning into our podcast, make sure that you subscribe, like, and share it with your friends. Until next time, this is Anthony Whittaker wishing you continued success.